Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com. You've just stepped inside the Walk and Talk podcast, number one in the nation for food lovers, chefs, and storytellers. I'm Carl Fiadini, your host, shining a light on the flavor, the hustle, and the heart of the industry. We're the official podcast for the New York, California, and Florida restaurant shows, the Pizza Tomorrow Summit, the U.S. Culinary Open at NAFM, and the North American media platform for the Burnt Chef Project. Recorded at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get the first bite. Find out more info at thewalkandtalk.com.
Hello, food fan. It's July 3rd, and we're asking, what does American food really taste like? In studio, Chef Thomas Parker's plating two summer dishes. On the line, we got Pooch Rivera's feeding of 10,000 people at the Uncle Sam Jam in New Orleans. We're going to go from fine dining to festival fire. This is the flavor of America. Plus, later in the show, we have Jillian Childs of Florida Farm Finder. She's going to join us with an agriculture update. You don't want to miss it. Everybody eats, and we kind of all need to know what is going on out there. Dude. Chef. My man. The chef. Thomas Parker, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Oh, dude. You did it again.
I try to do it every time.
You do. You bring the fire. Talk about what you did today.
A couple dishes that I have as I gear up towards a summer menu in my restaurant. Two completely separate dishes. One, fresh, local ingredients. We have a Florida grouper. Tons of fresh citrus. A little succotash in it. And then the cool part about that dish is we created an entire foam that covers most of the plate, and it really helps the acidity in the sauce and binds it all together.
It was a citrus foam.
Yeah, citrus foam. Fresh lemon. So all the way.
What happens is you eat this foam and it's refreshing. So, three or four times so far of the last couple of months, there's been some dishes that have come through here that are refreshing. Like, you take a bite and you're like, oh my goodness, this is so nice. It's fresh on the palate. That dish was it for me today. What was the second dish?
Second dish was classical French. It's a roasted chicken breast. It's wrapped in puff pastry. Boursin cream sauce on the base of the plate, confit garlic potatoes that we topped with a green pepper infused creme fraiche, topped that with a bourbon smoked trout caviar.
Pooch is going to join us later. He's doing a barbecue event. And my question is, what's American food? Tomorrow's the 4th of July. It's Independence Day. Today we were having French cuisine.
we're having elevated food. But I think what you made today is ultra USA. Ribs, barbecue, equally USA. What is your opinion?
No, I agree. I think ribs, burgers, dogs, like that screams 4th of July. I don't necessarily know if America has a cuisine though. It's this country, it's a potluck of all the different countries combined. I mean, look at us here in Tampa. You can go and get a fine dining French meal. All the Cuban, Spanish, Mexican heritage that's here. You can have picadillo three different ways from three different countries, all here in Tampa. But yeah, I wouldn't say America has an exact cuisine. I think, and that goes for all the countries around the world, I think we, like, there's traditional Italian dishes. There's traditional Spanish dishes. But you can't tell me you can't go to Italy and get a taco anywhere. There's got to be a taco somewhere in Italy.
I don't know about that. So here's the thing. I brought this question up because I feel like... Joking. I brought this question up because I feel like we have so many cultures that are in the United States. It is all USA, baby. Because if you're from France and you're bringing that here, and this is traditional French, like chefy chef cuisine, but it's here, that's USA, man. If you're talking about, you know, homemade pasta and, you know, Italian food and what was brought from there here, but we're producing it here, well, they live here now. It's USA, baby. That's what it is. That's my point. It is all here. It is different here than it is over there. You know, you can ask any chef, European chef, and they'll probably say that. Oh, no, it's not the same. It's not the same. So, yeah, what's done here is probably in the spirit of what's happening over there, and it's probably damn close, but it's going to be different because at the end of the day, it's being produced by somebody here. Now, is it good? Is it bad? That's not my point. Point is, we are a melting pot. We are a patchwork of different cultures that come together over food. That's the beauty of America. By the way, Thomas, can you say picadillo one more time?
Picadillo.
Okay. I wanted to... picadillo.
Is that what I said?
That was close or something like that. No. You laughed. He said picadillo. He did not. You laughed.
I wasn't laughing. Such an action. I was laughing because he brought up.
Here we go. I'm American.
There you go. Touché. When we're coming into a holiday, when we're coming into a time, we have Independence Day tomorrow, 4th of July. Do you plate differently? Do you deliver the goods, the food, in a different way when it's a holiday versus, you know, a regular Saturday night?
Yeah, absolutely. Think of what the 4th of July embodies. Backyard barbecues, potlucks, everybody's bringing a dish, you know. It's a little bit more family style, family oriented, go up, help yourself. So versus the technical fine plating, you can be a little bit more messy with it, and it's okay. And it's expected because that's what that is. That's what barbecue ribs are. That's what bratwurst and burgers are.
All right, I'm always down for a bratty. But if you were going to have a dish that represents the 4th of July, what is that dish to you?
Smoked ribs.
Why?
All the way. That takes me back to my childhood. My dad, every 4th of July, Memorial Day, Labor Day weekend, he loved the host because he knew he could fire the smoker up or get on the grill and just have fun. That was his fun. He wasn't an amazing cook by any means, but when you saw him over a grill, you saw that passion in him. And that was where he did his best work. That's where our best family meals came from as a kid. So he'd get on the smoker, smoke the ribs, grill them, barbecue them. Loved it. Every aspect of that day, having the friends, the family over, dad's out there getting drunk and smoking some ribs, chiefing his Winstons. And yeah, he was in his glory. So
whenever dad's on the grill, you know you're getting fed well.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny for me because it's a little different. I grew up eating the best homemade Italian food from my family, many of which were from there, from Italy. So I was very spoiled with the food. And as I got older, you know, you get older and the older folks get older too, and they cook less or they pass on, they move on. And what ends up happening is you start to embrace and you kind of fall into the hamburgers, hot dogs, sort of thing of it. Now, I'm always going to pick pasta, you know, like, hey, what's your favorite pasta? Red sauce, pasta. That's my favorite. That's my go-to any day, anytime. But if you're talking about like Independence Day, hot dogs, like I have to have hot dogs. And that's what I want. And I want that more than any pasta, any steak, anything, just what it is. I don't know where that came from other than as I grew up and came of age to go to barbecues other than my family's, and you start seeing those things. What do you think?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a hot dog. I was just having a conversation with my wife a couple of weeks ago. I threw some dogs on the grill, and there's something about just charring a dog over an open flame, taking that first bite, and like you said, it's a memory for you. It takes you back to that place, that time. Like it has that effect on everyone.
So to think about a hot dog for me, will I eat a chili dog? Absolutely. Will I eat something that's like something from Chicago dog? Yeah, man, I'm gonna eat it. But when I say that I want a hot dog, what I really want is I want a hot dog. I want a lot of ketchup and a little mustard. And that's what I like. I don't know why people like raise their eyebrows like ketchup on a hot dog. Yeah, ketchup on a freaking hot dog, man. What are you talking about? You know, there's people that are hell bent on no ketchup on a dog.
Yeah, my wife.
Oh, okay. You're married to one, huh?
I'm married to one, and it's funny because I'm just like you. I want a lot of ketchup and a little bit of mustard. That's my ideal hot dog. And every time I see her scowling at me as I'm slathering the ketchup on the dog, and she's over there just lathering mustard on hers, and I don't know what you're doing over there.
So when I lived in New York as a kid, it was mustard was for a knish, because you have a lot of, you know, the street food, hot dogs, and a knish. Those were the two main ones back then. Knish, mustard, ketchup on a hot dog for me. And then I was like, well, I like the mustard though on the knish. So that's when I started putting it on the dog. And that's just the way it is. And anybody who wants to fight me on that, bring it, because, you know, you're not going to tell me different. And 80% of the time, I want yellow mustard. Frenchie's style, yellow mustard.
Absolutely. Let me ask you something. While we're on the topic of hot dogs and Do you stop at the street vendor to get a hot dog?
Hell yeah.
It's one of the best dogs you'll ever get.
But
I don't care how disgusting it is.
So yes, well, to answer you, 100%. It's not the same as how it used to be. I am a dirty water hot dog guy. I don't mind them now that they're on the spinning little grill or whatever. That's cool. Or a flat top. That's fine. But I like it the old days.
I want it out the dirty water.
Yeah. 100% that.
So good.
And it does wonders for your immune system. I don't know what the hell is in there, but you never get sick.
I'm all about the chili dogs, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Me too.
All about the chili dogs.
Me too.
I will say, do you ever put mustard on your chili dog?
So I grew up in Miami. There's a place down there called Arbetters. They've been around since the 50s.
Yeah, I've been there.
They do an MOC, mustard onion chili.
That's the best chili dog, mustard onion chili.
All day. The place he's talking about, though, is...
They're legit, man. It's like,
been around for...
Forever.
Yeah.
Hey, have you ever been part of a statewide movement to change a law that seems horrifically unfair to small producers in your state? Well, now we can say that. Really excited to report this week that the state legislation change tied to the Florida small poultry permit is completely wiped off the table. They have withdrawn the resolution to change the definition of dress in the state, and we are looking forward to a new hearing July 10th in Tallahassee at 3125 Collier Boulevard, and that will be at 9 a.m., I believe. We are thrilled by the public's response. We actually ended up shutting down the email address that was attached to this proposal. We even partially shut down the FDAC server because of the overwhelming response. There were a lot of people involved in getting the word out, and we are so thrilled that our farmers are able to keep doing things to the USDA standard and that the state is listening to us in this process. Please pay more attention to what's going on in Florida by following our feed, and we are so happy to be a part of this. Thanks for your time.
Chef, let's get Pooch on the phone, man. I know he's over at the Uncle Sam Jam in New Orleans. Pooch, you there?
I am, sir. How are y'all?
Man, if I was any better, I'd be you. How are you doing, baby?
Well, I mean, I'd say if I was any better, I'd be like you guys. You guys are eating, you know, animal breast stuff with wild mushrooms and crude with a, you know, some sort of French fresh, I believe I heard, and then a smoked caviar.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be delightful. It's a little too hot for that over here. We, as always, these type of things are full with stress and what have you, just on your own team and everything you're trying to get accomplished. But other people who are ill-prepared in their own sanitation, as chefs out there, listen, anybody with a food truck, and make sure your sanitation is up to par, because you're not only hurting the public by not doing that, you're hurting other chefs and people that are trying to get their stuff going and get inspected.
I mean, you're hearing it live. How many people are you cooking for over there?
So we are cooking for trying to bring it back. It is 4th of July here, but this is a ton of a time where we also honor our first responders and military, National Guard, all of the people, because it's hurricane season. So us being that we you know, you guys just got hit with a hurricane last year as well. And so you know how it feels. Even 2 blocks from your home, it was really, really bad. But here, so we honor our first responders, and we do a lot of different things for that. So we're cooking for the first responders from multiple parishes that come around. So we're cooking for 10,000 first responders and their families. Cumulatively, let's say it's probably 7,000 first responders, and then we feed their families too, so which makes it about 10,000. So that's what we do, and that's what we've been working on kind of really for the last 3 days. So our booth is doing a pirog, which, and we also tried to feed, we don't want to feed them carnival food or festival food. We want to feed them, and chefs come together to give them the best of what they can give to the people that give us the best as well, you know. So we are doing a pirog, which is basically a kind of a Cajun word for a boat. So we're taking Dongfeng Bakery and taking their pistolets, setting them out and actually putting oysters and shrimp in there with a barbecue butter, and then kind of bruleeing some cheese on top of that, and kind of doing those for the guys, just showing our appreciation. We're also doing some boudin, but the boudin pretty much sold out already because that goes like hotcakes.
Oh, my God. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. No, I tell you what. I wish I had some of that here in the AC, of course, you know?
Of course. But yeah, there's nothing like, for instance, when you're doing an airline chicken breast and crude, there's nothing like some seafood and a barbecue butter and crude as well. Anything in bread that can sop up. You're using puff pastry. Obviously, we're using fresh baguette. But at the end of the day, we're taking cross cultures and everything that we've learned, whether it be in culinary school apprenticeships from the brigade system, Escoffier in France, bringing it here to celebrate an American 4th of July. You couldn't do that better than, what better city than New Orleans, you know?
Man, I'll tell you what, you're saying all the right stuff, Pucci. So listen, when people are getting in line and they're looking for food, what are they ordering the most of?
We are not really where the people are, the actual concessions people are. We're kind of in operations. So I guess you would say we're kind of craft service of the source, that kind of thing. People can just come up if they have a bracelet and get many different offerings that multiple chefs are showing off are doing for them. I would assume that there's always snowballs. The snowballs are a big thing, especially when it's 90 degrees, 100 degrees like it is here. And then, honestly, your festival foods down in New Orleans are a little bit different. Everything's going to be usually going to be topped with crawfish. Crawfish, actually, this season are still in abundance, even through this hot month. And then oysters are in abundance, too. So a lot of the char-grilled oysters, boudin, crawfish, and then crawfish nachos, crawfish things like that, tacos of every sort, lots of Vietnamese food, lots of Honduran food, lots of different cultures. This year's a lot of Indian booths I saw.
Well, you talked
so
about
it's really a cross-culture of celebrating America, like culinary-wise or through food, epicurean-wise, but utilizing all the cultures that are kind of meshing us into what the United States is, you know, today.
You're saying it right, man. Tell us more about Dong Phong and the Vietnamese.
So Vietnamese, about 50 years ago after the war, New Orleans are in, yeah, primarily New Orleans, but Louisiana has a culture, swamp culture that kind of coincides jungly, just like their culture was there. And then it's a very Catholic city, which they were as well, because, you know, they were occupied by the French for a long period of time as well. Thus, them knowing how to make baguettes and all kinds of French pastries and whatnot, and even just having French class, most of the chefs, even though they're Vietnamese style, they're mostly French classically trained in Asia. One of the only countries that are still French classically trained as chefs out there. But so there's just a very major big influence of Vietnamese culture in New Orleans throughout the last 50 years, and primarily within the last like 15 years. Big resurgence here of Vietnamese people who came back after Katrina and have really just kind of opened up the culinary world to their interpretation of Creole food, adding their style and pizzazz in there. And it's pretty cool because, you know, I learned this at Bocuse when I realized that people come, they're French classically trained, and then they go back home, and then they come to a place like New Orleans and then get to redevelop that fusion all over again. And it's kind of a double layer of fusion that makes things taste really good down here.
You know, I asked a question earlier to Chef Parker. What is the most American cuisine that we have?
I think it's probably the hamburger, man. That's a universal thing. No matter anywhere in the world, people, there's many different, you know, millions of interpretations of people's, you know, pulling touches on hamburgers. But there's nothing like a good old just classic Americana hamburger that everyone from all over the world loves. So that would be my choice.
Yeah, well, I'm down for a nice burger too, man. Especially for tomorrow, 4th of July, man. You got the nice burgers, dogs, fireworks, some bourbon. I think we're doing good.
What more do you need?
I have two chefs on the line. What are the biggest pressures between serving, you know, the singular elevated plate versus, you know, ground and pound at an event like Puchasat today?
I think it's bigger pressure when you're doing elevated dishes. It requires a team. It requires people that they know they can depend on you, and you can depend on them to make every element of that dish the best it can be. Here, I think it's just more when doing, you know, selling vending or through food trucks and that would have you festival food, even just disaster relief food and things like that. I think that it's really about nurturing people and feeding people, and I think it's just about It can be, obviously, you want everything to taste good. You want everything to be cooked properly to sanitation purposes and what have you. But at the end of the day, a lot of these people just come to volunteer. And they enjoy working with chefs and learning and being able to say that they did work with accomplished chefs. But they love to volunteer and give back to these people. And that, to me, is something that's more fulfilling and more, even though it's hard work and it's hot and it's stressful, it's still therapeutic to give back. And I think when you feel everybody's soul together doing that for a good cause, it makes things way easier than a high stress, high volume, you know, a la minute kind of a kitchen.
Yeah, definitely. I think I think each one of them equally has a lot of stress involved with it, but they're two completely separate aspects of stress. Like what Pooch is doing right now, it's just go, 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 go. There's no stop. You're feeding thousands of people with a small team. On the elevated side of it, you have a larger team, but every second counts. It's still go, 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 but every step takes longer. So every aspect, every movement, everything you're doing, it's got to be timed precisely.
I bet that's something that when you're doing one, you're almost wishing you were doing the other, right? It's like the other one's easier. But then you do the other one, and now you're like, nah, the other one's easier.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Thomas describing that made me have FOMO. It made me want to be in that situation. And I haven't been in that situation in the last 2 or 3 years. I've been in a fine dining situation where we're running service. And in the last couple of years of my career as a restaurateur, I was usually washing dishes. You know, that gave me the best excitement. I could see everything. I understood what was coming back. All of the above. I had full control of the tissue from that aspect. And I wanted to show my people that I was, you know, who I was at the end of my career. But at the end of the day, I'm jealous of that, those moments that Thomas gets to have now with his staff, because to me, that's the biggest drug. The biggest drug is the synergy. It's going to war and everything clicking, and the high fives and the hugs and the cigarettes and the just, you know, jokes afterwards and all of the above, whether it's going out to have beers or it's just having a powwow after, you know, kicking it by the, you know, in the milk crates outside. That's the adrenaline I truly miss. And it's worth the stress to get to that point, you know, in my opinion.
You know, it's when you're talking about that, it helps to relieve some of the burnout. You know, I was just thinking of this the other day. You know, sometimes you finish with a shift at the end of the night, and typically you want to just get your side work done and get the hell out of there. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And you embrace the fact that you know you're going to be stuck in that building for an additional hour and a half, 2 hours. And you kind of find yourself in this position where you're like, you know what? I'm okay with it. And then I got my boy over there, my girl over there, people that, you know, even if you don't necessarily get along with them, you know, they're with
you. You're in it together.
You're all in it together, and it's okay. And it helps to, in my experiences, that helped to kind of take the edge off of the burnout.
Yeah, definitely. It
agreed.
The camaraderie that you have in a kitchen environment, you know, I just had a kitchen meeting this past Tuesday, 2 days ago, and I told my whole staff, if you guys are slacking, if you're cutting corners, you're only doing it to hurt yourself and the other 10 people that's sitting around here, because we're the team. We're the ones working together every single day. And most days it's all of us here doing everything we can to get the job done.
What's your earliest culinary memory of the 4th of July?
My dad, of course, he was on the grill. He did ribs and chicken, and he was so excited because he found this new barbecue sauce line that the grocery store had just come out with, and they had like 3 different heat levels of the barbecue sauce. And of course, my dad was one of those macho guys, like nothing hurt him. So he buys the most extreme one, and that's what he does. He only does the ribs in the most extreme heat barbecue sauce. And we're all eating these ribs dying. I'm probably like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. Like I'm crying. I couldn't even eat the dang things. And my dad's sitting there over there. Oh, yeah, these are good. These are good. No. I saw him eat one rib and then he threw the rest away. Yeah, he ruined 4th of July that year.
Same question, Pooch.
Mine's kind of a taste of irony. The ones that I miss the smell of, it doesn't matter what specific time, but I miss the smell of gunpowder from fireworks and barbecue and charcoal brewing. And then I miss being a kid and we'd be in the Panhandle somewhere like Bernito Key or Destin, what have you. And, they'd call us up from the house that we'd rent, have a huge family. So we probably had, you know, 40 to 50 people staying in, you know, a quadruple decker house on the beach, and coming in, running in and not washing off with the hose, not doing anything, pissing everybody off, screaming at me and running in the kitchen, grabbing whatever the food was, end up having sand in the food and chewing sand in my mouth. Like, those are the fond memories of me just being a dumbass kid. But those are just, that's what I think. When I think 4th of July, I think being on the beach, I think being a bad kid, I think gunpowder from fireworks, and I think the smell from the grill, you know? Those are the things that I think of.
I love that. That was a good one. I have one. So this was probably 1988, something like that. I was about 14, 15, something like this. And my father, was Mr. 4th of July. No one was going to outdo this man with fireworks. In the 80s, back then, he would spend $2,000 on fireworks. It would last for 2 days. We had all the biggest, hard-to-get, illegal fireworks and the entire neighborhood. Hundreds of people would drive through. They would come through. So one year, this year, 1988, 89, something like that, we boxes, and the garage is filled with all this stuff. People are starting to come over, barbecue, the whole thing. We had three Dobermans back then, fully grown, beautiful animals, family dogs. I'm in my room, and my father walks in. He says, hey, Carlo, where's your skateboard? I says, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, what do you want my skateboard for? You know, he's like 45 years old or something like this at the time, 40-something. I said, what do you want my skateboard for? Don't worry about it, you know. And I see he's got the leashes, the dog leashes in his hands. And I looked at the leashes, and I looked up at him, and I said, Dad, don't do what you're going to do. I knew what he was going to do. I said, don't do it. He says, Carlo, give me the board. Where is it? Your closet. So he gets my skateboard. It was a Rob Roscoe, by the way, I'm just saying. He gets my board. He goes outside. He brings the dogs. I'm following him. I'm in tow. And as he's a 270-pound man on my skateboard with the three dogs pulling him, he went about 5 feet. I don't know if it was a little pebble that got stuck under the wheel or whatever, but the skateboard stopped. He went up in the air and he came down on his ankle. The ankle broke. It was a clean break. The entire bone, like all the bones that hold your foot to your leg, they were protruding out of his skin. And I'm like, holy crap. And I'm looking at him, and he's sitting there, and I run over to him, and he goes, I should have listened to you. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Well, to finish that story, yeah, he went on the ambulance. Yes, we didn't do any fireworks, and it ruined the entire 4th of July that year. But I saw that man do something, and it boggles my mind. He says, lean behind me. Hold me up, my back. You know, so I'm holding him up by his shoulders. He grabs his foot, and he grabs his leg, and he lines it up properly, and he pushes the bones back into his back inside.
Oh my God.
And I'm looking at him, and I'm just thinking to myself, I got to do better in school. I don't want any trouble with this guy. Like, and you know, and he ate it like a champ. Unbelievable. Anyway, that was my 4th of July story. So,
and the only time in your life you were right was 4th of July.
Well, you know, it's funny because true story.
I keep that memory myself too.
True story. He would actually say that. He goes, you know, man, I think back to that. I should have listened to you, kid. I should have listened to you. I'm like, yeah, I know. Hey, Pooch, man, I know you got to get back to it. How did people find you on the socials, buddy?
At Foodie Patootie, FOODIEPATUTIE. Also, you can always shoot me an email at PRosera@walkandtalk.com. Anybody that's looking to do sponsorships with us, partnerships, any of the above, feel free to shoot me that email. And well, let's talk, guys. We got a lot of things in the burner, and we'd love to partner with you.
Pooch, have a wonderful rest of the day. Have a beautiful 4th of July, and I'll catch you on the other side, baby, okay?
Same, man. Thanks. Love y'all, man. Kiss your babies, man. Happy 4th of July.
Take care, Pooch.
All right, y'all.
Yeah, Poochie's a good dude, man. He's doing a lot of stuff for us also. He's out there. He's doing the hustle. Thomas, as always, man, you did terrific. What are you doing for the weekend?
I'm working, bro.
I should have done that.
Yeah, we've got I'm throwing a 4th of July pool bash at our hotel resort. We've got live DJs coming to the pool bar both Friday and Saturday, some drink specials from Jim Beam and Surfside. Of course, some of that barbecue food we've been talking about all day long here.
Man, you're living the you're definitely living that restaurant life. All right, how do people find you?
On Instagram, chef_Thomas Parker.
I love it. Next time you come, we're bringing back some Aussie Select. I want you to do a couple of dishes that I have in mind.
Right on.
Awesome. Johnny boy. Those pictures, phenomenal. I like how you put them on a TV too. All right, listen, you guys are great. Had a wonderful day today. Can't wait till next week. You won't be here, but we are out. Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.